Second Amendment Tuesdays with Attorney Penny Dean here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse, 1-866-823-1077. We'll tell you about a story that occurred over the weekend next on Bulldog Live.
Now, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up, at least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good.
Well, that was lovely. Thank you, Mr. Computer. All right, well, you get the message there. That Steve Voss would come and take it. Penny Dean, how are you today?
Fine, how are you?
That was a little disconcerting, especially as I'm, like, reaching across the room for something.
Yeah, and the whole thing is I really like that song.
I do, too. Well, we'll make up for it later.
By golly, you know, what can you do, you know?
Well, I hope you had a wonderful weekend.
Well, you know, I was doing yucky work all weekend. Yeah, I know. I want to go shoot, and here's what I joke. I spend my whole life fighting for everyone else's right to shoot, and I never get to shoot.
Oh.
I know what a gun looks like, and there's a trigger, and there's this thing called ammunition.
Uh-huh.
My reloading bench, other than the fact I keep the dust off it, you know, has dust on it. You know, I couldn't tell you what a decapping die looks like anymore. It's just like, you know, it's too much work. And it's one of the loves of my life. You know, I have a single stage press. You know, all these people have these fancy pantsy Dillons, which are great, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a Forrester Coax. It's 25 years old. I've used it for 25 years, and it's just as good as the day I bought it. You know, the only thing the newer, fancier ones have is the newer Forrester Coaxes have the yoke is larger to account for micrometer head dies. Which, of course, I have micrometer head dies now, and it's tough using it with that. The newer one gives you more space. But other than that, they haven't changed that press for 25 years because it just doesn't get any better.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just the best, coolest, you know, and there's just like this ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch when you're loading it. It's the coolest thing. If people who don't do their own custom-crafted ammunition should, because there's just so much fun in it.
Wow.
Yeah, and you learn so much, because how can you know about a lot of things about ammunition if you don't actually create your own?
I guess.
Yeah. You just, it's like everything else. In order to learn it, you have to do it.
True. Yeah, I guess so. Well, it's kind of like building a clock. I don't know. that's about how complicated it would be to me anyway.
And so, of course, the other thing is I had to do it to keep sane, because I'm really disturbed. And now I don't know Jonathan Irish. I don't know his family. I don't know anything about him. But I do know on October 8th, DCYF came into Concord Hospital with what I call appropriate or inappropriate affidavits and seized his child. But I think here's what's important to me from what I've read in the press. We talked about Concord Hospital putting up no firearm signs.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Irish claims he was frisked, and I have
against his will, at the time that the baby was being taken from him.
Absolutely. I have a problem with people being frisked without probable cause. Let's say they're taking the baby from him, but at this point, for them to say, well, this is an emotional time and we have to check and blah, 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 what you're implicitly suggesting is because it's an emotional time, he's going to act inappropriately if he has a defensive tool with him. And I, for one, am offended by that presumption.
Okay.
I just think it's absolutely offensive. And in this particular case, DCYF has always been, in my mind, in many ways, a rogue agency. I've represented people before DCYF. And most of the things before DCYF are confidential by law. And I can tell you that they targeted the former president of Gun Owners in New Hampshire and one of our directors. Both of those individuals homeschooled their children, and DCYF went after them in what I can only call to be frivolous and baseless charges. Both of those gentlemen prevailed, but after going through incredible amounts of money and incredible amounts of grief and trauma, and it really made those gentlemen at least really resolved to take a stand and to try and do something against a rogue agency that really is out of control in many ways. And I can tell you that when I was in law school, I represented an individual who, in my mind, the reason they were trying to take him away from his biological parent was his biological parent was very poor, working class. And they had this really nice house where the father was a professional and the mother was stay-at-home. And wouldn't that be a better home for that kid?
Absolutely.
And so you're going to take this guy's child away, you know, on that basis. And we were very fortunate in that when I handled this particular case, the first thing you do is I tell people in law, like everything else, you build a basement, then you build a foundation. You know, you build the basement and the foundation, then you build the walls, then you build the roof. Well, in looking at it, the rules they were going under, what's called the administrative rules that they were holding this particular hearing under, had expired. And so first thing I said, the hearings officer, I said, look, I said, we have expired rules here. And I said, you can't hold a hearing. You have no authority to hold this hearing because you have no rules. Well, that can't be. And she checked it out, and she's like, oh, my. Oh, my. And so my answer was, you're going to dismiss this case against my client and leave this alone. I said, if not, I'll be happy to call the press. And every other case that's been adjudicated under your expired rules, they might want to reopen those.
Yes.
And I really feel sad for the other people if they had lawyers going under those, that their lawyers didn't bother to check that very basic thing. Because the first thing you check in a case like this is, do they have the authority to hold this hearing? And if the rules are expired, they don't have the authority to hold a hearing in this particular case. Now, there's sometimes statutory authority they can still use, but usually the burden of proof is much higher. And so it appears to me from everything we're reading is that he is being targeted because he's a member of Oath Keepers.
And this is, again, back to Mr. Irish.
Jonathan Irish. Jonathan Irish, that he and his partner, if you will, his female partner.
Taylor is her last name, I believe. I can't remember her first name.
You know what? I'm trying to think of her first name right now as well.
Okay.
And you know, the bottom line is that it appears as if that, you know, they're making all sorts of allegations of child abuse and this and that and the other. But the bottom line is the child has just been born. How can you say they're going to abuse a child? Child's just been born.
Right. This is something that's concerning. And I have a story posted on my website as well at briantilton.com about this, because there's been many, many stories about this. People may have seen it in the Union Leader over the weekend or in the Concord Monitor. And also been online in a number of websites. And I posted one right from the Oath Keepers organization's website. Oath Keepers, by the way, is somebody who I met but didn't really spend a whole lot of time with just a couple of weeks ago. I just didn't have the opportunity to really, you know, stand there and chat with them at their information booth because they were busy talking with other people. So I'm like, I'll come back to you later. And so I decided to. Stephanie Taylor is her name. Thank you.
Yeah, I know it's Taylor, and I couldn't think of the first name.
But anyway, so the DCYF is charging in this case that Jonathan Irish is a member of Oath Keepers, which they claim, DCYF, is claiming is a militia group. And I can tell you from what I have seen and heard of this organization, they are no such thing.
Let's just say for the sake of argument that they were a militia group. It's not illegal.
Okay. Yeah, true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
In other words, let's pretend they are. Let's pretend they're even something. Let's pretend, you know, they're 10 different, let's pretend he's a member of the Ku Klux Klan, let's say, okay? It's not illegal. They might be a horrible group that I don't agree with, but none of that is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's even more troubling, or should be more troubling to firearm owners, is all of the affidavits and the documents that I have seen in the press on the case say that Mr. Irish has purchased a handgun and a rifle and blah, blah, blah. And so I think of, first of all, two things. From everything I read, it's not illegal for this gentleman to possess a handgun or a rifle.
Because he has never been convicted of any crime of violence.
Correct. So from everything I know, because if, in fact, he were a prohibited person, they'd be arresting him and charging him and touting him, doing what's called the perp walk, you know, across the front page.
Right. He wouldn't be standing out in front of Concord Hospital holding sidewalk protests, getting served with letters, "Do not ever come in here again."
That's exactly right. And so the bottom line is them making a big deal about, you know, he's purchased this item or that item. Okay, he's not a prohibited person, so what? That's number one. But number two is, how do they know that he's purchased a handgun and a rifle and whatever else? So my question is, how did they get that information? Because when you and I go to a firearm store, purchase a, you know, a firearm, let's say going to purchase a handgun with a .44-73, you fill out a federal form that's mandated. Now, if you're purchasing a long gun, generally they call NICS, which is the feds. But if you purchase a handgun, they call the New Hampshire State Police. So here's my question. Did the New Hampshire State Police report to anyone that he purchased a handgun?
And would that be a violation of the law if they did?
In certain circumstances, absolutely. Or, you know, how
But they wouldn't know what exact type of handgun he would be buying, would he, when the gun shop owner makes that phone call to the state police?
If he purchases two or more within 5 business days, you have to fill out a separate federal form. And that federal form contains every bit of information saying it's a Glock 23, serial number ABC, blah, blah, blah.
But if I went and bought a Colt 38 Special or any other similar type of gun, and I just did it one time and didn't buy another one for another 3 years, they wouldn't really know what I was buying exactly.
No, they would just know you purchased a handgun.
Okay.
Okay, so they would say, okay, and now we're talking about New Hampshire because every state has a different point of contact, you know, for doing checks. So in New Hampshire, if you're buying a handgun, for example, what they would do is be calling the New Hampshire State Police, so they would know at least that you were purchasing a handgun. And so the question is, where are they getting this information? And not only that, I think it's really important to know that DCYF seems to take that as another chink of why this man isn't entitled to have custody of his child or children.
Right. A child that was not even 16 hours old, they came in and took him right from the hospital. Now, by the way, I think it's worth noting that when he was frisked, they found nothing on him. So,
And that's notable as well. But I'll tell you what, I find that offensive. So let's pretend that he had had a handgun and a backup on him. So what's that mean, that he cares about his personal safety?
Well, if he was concealed carry, as long as he had the proper license for that, what would be the crime?
That's exactly right.
All right, Penny, let's take a call before we take our break, shall we?
Yes.
1-866-823-1077. Second Amendment Tuesdays with Attorney Penny Dean. Mark from Hillsboro, you're on Bulldog Live. How are you?
I'm doing great today. You guys posed the question of how they obtain or how the hospital or DCYF finds out about that information. I had a child on June 28th of this year, and on your little exit interview from the hospital, they specifically ask if there is any or are any firearms in your household. And when I told them that that is absolutely none of their business, they kept harping on it and kept asking the question. So finally I said, yes, I have lots of firearms. They are all completely unregistered. They were purchased by private sales. And in fact, I have some out in the vehicle. I said, what is wrong with that?
Do you want me to tell you what? I wish you wouldn't have answered them just as a matter of principle, but what hospital was this child born at?
This was Concord Hospital.
Oh, you're kidding me. Could you do us a favor? Can you get a copy of those? Because you have a right, because they're your medical records or your child's medical records. If you don't have a copy of those, would you get us a copy of those, please?
Sure. I don't know. Yeah, they were writing stuff down and checking stuff off, so I don't know, you know, where that exists, but sure, I can try to obtain that information.
Absolutely, and we're happy to have every bit of your personal information redacted, but what I want is a copy of all those forms, so I think you need to really push, if you would, please, because this is the first that I heard on an exit interview of a childbirth that Concord Hospital is asking those invasive questions that really have nothing to do with safety, and quite frankly, I find offensive.
Well, and to follow that up, they have, within the first 48 hours, they send somebody from the hospital out to see how you're doing and, you know, making sure that, you know, parents are healthy and we're sane and the baby's healthy and feeding right and all that. They ask that question again, if there are any firearms in the home, and they came out to our home for that as well.
Okay, did they come out just to check on the baby, or did they come out just because you had firearms?
No. They supposedly send out everybody to check on the baby within the first 48 hours.
Is it through one of those, like, community organizations? I'm trying to think of the name of one of them. They did with us. They offered, you know, they didn't ask us anything about firearms, but, you know, they offered, you know, for new mothers, you know, well, you know, we can, you know, come out and give you a hand around the house a little bit, you know, picking up one or two things for you, that kind of stuff.
No, it wasn't anything like that. It was all on the health of the baby.
That sounds like they're playing a game, though. Let me ask you this, Bulldog. Was your child born at Concord Hospital?
No.
That makes me think, and this is what I've said for all along, we need to really organize and do something about the Concord Hospital issue, and here's why. if that didn't happen to you that they asked what firearms you had, it did happen to this gentleman and his child. That makes me know something I believed all along, but this is really becoming crystal clear, that this is a Concord Hospital anti-firearm policy.
Well, yeah, at least the anecdotal evidence would point in that direction, given the fact that they're doing this gun ban now on the hospital property. And, you know, this one of the reasons that was supported in the affidavit to take the baby from Jonathan Irish and Stephanie Taylor, you know, was the fact that he owned firearms. You know, you begin to, and now hearing this from Mark, you begin to wonder.
Yes, Mark, please, please, please follow up on that and, you know, repeatedly ask for all the paperwork and all the records, because I'll tell you what, this is hugely important. You're the first person to tell us this. And I bet you a nickel if it happened to you, it's happened to every other person who's had a child born at Concord Hospital.
Yeah, more than likely. So I just asked for all my exit surveys and, you know, all the exit documentation.
Yep, and don't tell them what you're after. Just do a generic request for all of it. Ask them for the extra surveys. Ask them for your baby's records, because here's what you also want to check. And I've had this actually happen to me in a different sense. You will be shocked if in all the hospital notes they write family owns guns or something. That I would find that offensive. So you need to get all your baby's hospital records, because here's what could happen in the future. Let's say that those records are transferred to another doctor, a pediatrician or anything. It's going to color his view of you as parents initially if they've wrote negative things in there about you and firearms ownership.
Interesting. Well, Mark, I've got to run. Penny Dean's phone number is 230-9999, and you can give her a question, give her a call if you have any further questions, and she would certainly love to hear from you regardless on this.
Yep, okay.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling.
All right.
Yep, have a good day.
Thanks, Mark. You too. Happy hunting for your records there. That should be very easy for anybody to get. You know, that,
it's supposed to be.
Get your own records. Yeah, sure. Okay, with that, Penny, I must take a timeout here. 1-866-823-1077. Second Amendment Tuesdays continues on Bulldog Live on the Pulse.
Bulldog Live will continue after these messages. Live on the Pulse.